You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, we bring you back with Peter Murphy here. Halftime, Columbus Crew down 1-0 to Minnesota United. Later on tonight, it's the Portland Timbers and FC Cincinnati in the MLS's back tournament. But we're switching gears right now on Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Switching gears to the NWSL Challenge Cup champions, the Houston Dash. Joining us now, Rachel Daly and Shea Groom. Rachel, Shea, thank you very much for taking the time out to come on the program tonight.
No worries.
Thanks for having us, Glenn.
Yeah, so, okay, so how does it feel to be the champions of the NWSL Challenge Cup? Based on what I'm seeing on social media, pretty damn good.
Yeah, we've had quite the celebration so far, and then I think we get to have some sort of social distancing celebration on Thursday. So, obviously, a huge win for us, huge win for the club, and we're just excited we got to bring it home to Houston.
Shea Groom and Rachel Daly joining us. Rachel, talk about how important this tournament can be in the context of just, you know, I've heard changing culture. You know, there really was a very vivid togetherness and collective spirit amongst this group of ladies.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've said this so many times and I'm probably sound like I'm just repeating myself over and over again. But, yeah, I think the culture this time around is something different. I think, you know, I always say it, but our circle was something that we were really proud of. And I think that carried us through the whole tournament. Obviously, it's difficult in the bubble and being there for a month, I've seen the same people every single day and then, you know, not actually getting a break from anything. And it's difficult, but I think the strength of the character in our squad is definitely what took us to the top in this tournament.
Shea, when we talk about the first two games, you guys came out, you know, I mean, the quality of some of the goals, they were just gorgeous to watch. Breakout play, you know, five goals in two games, all coming from Mewis, Daly, and Groom. Tell me about the next two games and what the realization was after those two games, then heading into the knockout stage. Because, look, it was kind of a unique tournament in that you knew you had these four games to kind of figure things out.
Yeah, I mean, I think we went in wanting to win every game, and obviously we had a great start, and then, you know, you hit that third game, and it's like, all right, it's our third game in 10 days, and, you know, we're feeling it a little bit, and, you know, so I think fatigue had a little bit to do with it. I think if you look back at those goals, a lot of it was, you know, just little mental errors rather than, you know, really getting beat in the run of play, but, you know, inches. So I think it was good for us. It, you know, it made us hungry. You know, I think it humbled us in a way and kept us on our toes and really made us focus and, you know, push us into that quarterfinal game where obviously we had another matchup with Utah and had to go to penalties. So definitely think that we had to, you know, battle that kind of adversity and still stay in it and still believe. You know, it's easy to throw in the towel after you have a couple losses, but I think, you know, we saw the bigger picture and knew that, you know, there was going to be a time to perform, and I think we were able to do that in the critical games.
Rachel, I'm interested to hear this from you, because I always felt that there was an awful lot of pressure on you to carry this team in recent years. Do you feel like that pressure has been alleviated in a healthy way? Not that you don't put pressure on yourself, but to have players around you like Shea Groom, like a healthy Christy Mewis. Does this allow you to play the game maybe a little bit freer?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think when you have those players around you, it makes your job a hell of a lot easier. I think we had I think the team this year has been so good. I think the trades that James made has strengthened our team. We know we needed to fix holes in the back line. You know, we needed to have a strong core and a strong spine. I think we've done that. And I think for me, having those players around me definitely improves my game and helps me. And like you said, I do always put that pressure on myself, so that will never disappear. But it's definitely nicer to have players like Shea and Christy to take that away from me as well. And, you know, actually unbelievable people behind me giving me the ball. You know, I think it's a lot easier this year for me as a player to just do what I want to do. And I feel like I'm a little bit more free when you've got people like that behind you.
So, Shea, on that last goal, did you give us the wow factor with a little bit of the self-pass around Alyssa Nayer there to hit the empty net? Because that was a beautiful way to cap it.
You know, I think when you're dribbling, you know, from close to half field, there's not much going on up there. You know, there's obviously you have a split second to decide if you want to chip or not, if you're going to dribble. Obviously, Alyssa's a world-class goalkeeper and has proven that on the international stage and for our country. So, you know, I was just lucky to get it by her and, you know, felt like I wanted to change it up and try something different. And I think it was Rachel that talked to her after the game, and she was like, yeah, I definitely didn't see that one coming. So, you know, obviously incredible pass from Rachel and to create that space. And then, you know, obviously an incredible feeling to just cap it off and knew that we could seal the win at that point.
Yeah, that was exciting. That was a great give and go, by the way. So do you, you know, do you guys find that in teams past that you've played on, that technical players kind of gravitate towards each other? And, you know, like, let's just say Manchester United, for instance. It seems like Paul Pogba, now that Bruno is there, all of a sudden seems to be having a little bit more joy in enjoying the game. Do you women find that?
Yeah, gotcha. I think that I've said it in a couple interviews, but I feel like I'm surrounded by people that play like me and that think like me, and not to say what we're the same player by any means, but just think that passionate and aggressive mentality only helps unlock it out of all of our players. And so I think it's definitely been an incredible experience to, you know, be around players that you can build that chemistry with, and that it happens so naturally and organically, and that we were able to unlock it, obviously, in such a short amount of time, you know, going from the quarantine training into the Challenge Cup and, you know, having to do it relatively fast and with new faces. So it's definitely an honor and something that I've been excited to be a part of.
You know, from the outside, when I look at this, I think it's very easy for people on the outside to not realize how difficult, you know, adhering to protocol, the routine, you know, being in you know, pretty much the same routine every day. I really give a tremendous amount of credit to all the women of the NWSL and the coaching staffs for what they've done, and the same to Major League Soccer in their situation as well. I don't think people on the outside get how maybe mentally challenging this is as well.
I think such a mentally challenging experience and something that we kind of honed in on every single day. And James, you know, made sure that we stayed in it the whole time. And it would have been easy to give up, I think, in a lot of instances. But I think something we'll look back on. And obviously it was rewarding for us coming out with the championship. But in the moment, might not have been so easy.
Rachel, how about you?
Yeah, I think it's different for different people. I think it was a struggle sometimes, and being in that bubble for a whole month is difficult. But you know, we had the focus, and if you take your mind off that focus, you lose sight of it. And I think we just, you know, we all came together with that common goal of winning the tournament, and I think that's kind of what got us through. But yeah, it's definitely not an easy place to be. I made the best of it, I think, but you know, I know some people struggle. But yeah, on the outside looking in, I don't think you can actually really see how difficult it is, because you know, you're not living it. And just simple things like not being able to go to a coffee shop in the morning, like things like that, and just always being trapped in a hotel, it's not the most fun place to be, but you've got to make it what you want to make of it.
The other thing that I thought was really dynamic was the fact that all of a sudden the team shape, the compactness of the team, obviously you didn't concede a goal in the knockout stages, which is pretty amazing. That really changed dramatically to me, was the overall team shape. Take me into that a little bit, how that happened, and how it happened in such a good way, because you kind of went from one place to another, and all of a sudden, wow, I mean, this is a team that's together. They're moving up and down the field together. The lines are tight. Everybody's got support and cover. Take me into that a little bit, starting with you, Shea.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think in the first four games, we had a lot of things to figure out. And, you know, I think for us, it was little adjustments, but they obviously made a big difference, a huge difference. And, you know, some of that came from just purely playing together. You know, we did a lot in the preseason, but some people battled injuries, and whatnot. So it wasn't until we actually got to Utah that it was like, okay, everyone's healthy, everyone's feeling good going into this, and then obviously having to make those little adjustments from there. And I think the big one for us, at least offensively, was just staying focused the whole time and knowing that in any football game, like, it can change at the drop of a hat, and you got to stay focused every second. And I think our back line did that, and, you know, Katie and Megan especially, and then obviously, you know, Alicia Chapman and Haley in the last two games, you know, filling in at that right back position, and was incredibly solid and I think completely shut down any kind of attack against us.
How about you, Rachel?
Yeah, I think Shay said it all, to be honest. I think it all comes from the back line, and I think in previous years we haven't had that strength and the solidity at the back. And again, I'll talk about obviously the trades that James made. I think he was smart in making those trades, and they've come in and they've, you know, not only good footballers but very good people and just good to have around. And I think they've been absolutely solid throughout the whole tournament, and Jane included. You know, I think keeping that many clean sheets for that amount of time against the top clubs in the league, it's not an easy thing to do. But yeah, I think our overall tactics and shape was honestly what won us the tournament. I said to James yesterday on the plane, I think he actually put on a tactical masterclass this tournament, and a lot of teams didn't know how to break it down. A lot of teams got really frustrated, and I think that's, you know, all credit to him. I think we had a plan, a clear plan of what we were going to do, and we executed it, and it worked really well.
Last one before I let you go, and I only got a minute up until this break. And again, thank you both for coming on. Congratulations on the NWSL championship. I'm wishing there were more games coming up, and I'm sure you probably are too. I'm wishing there were more to see this story continue. But what's going to happen in the next couple of months? Do you know?
Yeah, I think that's obviously something that the league is figuring out and playing around with in this next week or so. You know, I think we're going to try, if we can, to obviously get some kind of games in, whether it's just exhibition matches and whatnot, and obviously keep players in the league playing. But, you know, I think obviously having to put this tournament together at the last second was a feat in itself. And, you know, I think it did a lot of good and brought a lot of viewership and fansmanship to this league, and was an incredible thing. And, you know, I think we'll be itching to get on the field any chance that we get. But, yeah, we haven't heard much yet.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let you go. Rachel, by the way, congratulations on your Leeds United and Marcelo Bielsa. I know you're very happy about that as well. Leeds are back.
Very happy. Very, very happy.
But not as happy as the Houston Dash winning the NWSL Challenge Cup. Rachel Daly and Shay Groom, thank you both for coming on the show tonight. I really appreciate it, and I know our listeners do too.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Glenn.
Good night. Okay, that's Rachel Daly and Shay Groom. Talk about two female soccer players, or just soccer players in general, that you are drawn to when they play the game. Fun to watch play the game. Exciting, energetic, come up with the unknown. So we're going to take a break. More to come here. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, because the NWSL Challenge Cup Championship coach, James Clarkson. Coming up next, brought to you by Lustau Vermouth. Ask for it in your local liquor store. And presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
I'm Greg Berhalter. You're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN 97.5.
The team that before this tournament had never made the playoffs, had never played in a knockout game, now knocks off the Chicago Red Stars for the first championship in club history.
That was the final call from Jen Hildreth on the CBS coverage of the NWSL Challenge Cup Final. Houston Dash are your champions. They are back in Houston with the trophy. They were led to the title by their manager, James Clarkson. He comes to us now courtesy of John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. James, thank you for coming on the show tonight.
No problem, Glenn. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it must have been a heck of a nice ride home from Utah.
Yeah, I'm still trying to recover. I'm a little bit tired. I think all the celebrating and all the emotion, everything else has finally caught up with me. So we're just hanging in there.
Yeah, I watched you on the sidelines, and I thought, you know, wow, this is mentally very, very tough on coaches. It's tough on players. You know, you're in an environment that's very structured and disciplined. You must have had to do a really great psychological job here with the players. Were there ever times in this tournament you were concerned about, you know, people's focus and things like that?
Yeah, we went through all sorts of dramas, ups and downs, all of it. But I think the biggest thing we underestimated, and I think this is what everybody that's going into these tournaments that's going to be in a bubble has to deal with, and it's the mental load. Some stage, everybody hits the wall, and for us, it was 2 weeks in. It was after the when we beat Rain 2-0, leading up to Sky Blue game, where we didn't play very well. And everybody just mentally, the excitement was worn off now. We're into the grind of it, and it was really tough. So we the schedule that we had, we were playing every four days. We didn't have a day off, and it was really tough. But we managed through it. We got a day off, and that helped. We did a lot of walking around the parking lot, just trying to break things up, take pressure off the players, take the mind off it. I do think a lot of the work that we did in the pre-season and during the lockdown really paid off for us when we got to the tournament. We spent a lot of time looking at what our values are, who we want to be, how people will see us, how they perceive our things, and all of that effort in creating these values within the team, I thought really paid off when the going gets tough and then it gets hard. We had these things that we could go back to, get refocused, and I think that really helped.
Talking to James Clarkson, the coach of the NWSL Challenge Cup winners, Houston Dash, bringing a title back to Houston. If we continue on with that, take me now into what was an amazing, I just thought an amazing turnaround, not necessarily a turnaround now that I know some of the other challenges that are going on, but, the team shape improved. I mean, you weren't conceding chances. You don't give up any goals. You run to the title. Tell me, after that fourth game, take us from there through the rest of the tournament from the coach.
So we weren't expecting to play Utah, and then all of a sudden on that last day, the results went funny, and we ended up, I think we went up a slot, and Utah Sky Blue might have dropped down one, and it all changed, and suddenly we were playing Utah again, and I think they're a very talented team, and they've got some really good individuals, so we knew it was going to be a tough game, and we looked at it, and I felt that against Sky Blue and Washington, the first half against Washington, we were basically trying to defend the whole field, and there were just too many gaps, and we were trying to cover too much space. And Martin Woods, we'd had a lot of success in the first two games in pressing, and our timing of when we were going to press became a little bit erratic, and that just created too much space. So we changed the shape, we changed the personnel, and went more to a 4-1-4-1 and had different roles, responsibilities for those wide players, but still with the goal of being able to press and win it back, but picking our right moments, but reducing the size of the field. And that, I think that just made us much more effective, and suddenly teams weren't able to break us down, they weren't able to play through us, and we won it. We were just in some great spots where we could get the attacking players going, and you know, they could cause havoc. And I felt in certainly in Utah and Portland, we were getting ourselves into some fantastic positions, but just weren't quite executing it properly. And if a little bit more composure, a little bit more quality in that final third, I think we'd have scored a lot more goals. But, you know, to come through a penalty shootout was exciting. But when it went to penalties, I had no doubt at all, because I felt that we'd practice them a lot. And even when we were in Houston, every time we finished the game, we always finished with PKs, because we knew at some stage it could play a major role in the tournament. And then with Jane in goal, we knew that, you know, she'd probably save one or two, and ultimately we'd probably only need to score three or four penalty kicks, and that's how it turned out. So we were thrilled with that. And then the momentum really picked up as we headed into the Portland game.
Yeah, how galvanizing was that penalty kick win? Because I watched that on TV and everybody diving on top of each other, and I just said at that point, I go, you know what, they're going to win the title.
it's incredible. You know, people either love them or hate them, but they're incredibly exciting for everybody watching on TV. And, you know, I just think having a goalkeeper like that you know she's just going to save one or two. You know she is. So as long as we can stay calm, we went through, like I said, we practiced them, we talked about them. We got to a stage where we were looking at statistically where you score the most penalty kicks, things like that. And, you know, the players that we made sure the players that really wanted to take one were on the field. And, you know, they delivered, and so did Jane. And she was going to take the fifth one, so I thought that would have been quite nice if she had scored that and won it herself. But obviously she won it with a save, so no problem.
Talking to James Clarkson, head coach of the Houston Dash, NWSL Challenge Cup winners. They did it on national TV on CBS this past Sunday. The narrowing of the, you know, condensing the field more, I thought that brought the best out of Sophie Schmidt. I thought she was all, not that anybody wasn't excellent, but I thought she really was excellent, and really her international pedigree started to bubble up to the surface a little bit in the knockout stages.
Oh, for sure, with the experience that she's got. And, you know, we rotated her and Hayley Hansen in the first four games, and, you know, I actually think that competitive edge really came through, because it was a desire to want to play. She doesn't want to be on the bench. She really wants to play. Same with Hayley. And, yeah, by reducing that space, she was having to cover way too much ground. But by bringing the two wide, rather than playing with almost two wingers, we played with two wide midfield players, really condensed the middle of the field. We got more compact between the players and between the lines, and that's where I think teams really struggle to get through us and create any real sort of chances.
James, I honestly, after you guys went up 1-0 on the penalty, I didn't feel like Chicago was ever going to score a goal in this game. I that's how stout I thought you guys were as a team, you and the ladies were. Pretty remarkable. For you, and I know you've talked to me about this, about changing the culture, changing the perception. This is one way to do it. Certainly a start.
Yeah. But there's no end game, because obviously now expectations get higher, and, you know, the pressures are going to come even more, and, you know, people will now want to beat us and knock us back down. But, just seeing the players, the way they reacted, how much they wanted this and how much they've enjoyed it, they want more. So the fact that there's a real desire and a hunger there to want more is exciting for me as a coach. And hopefully, you know, with the off-season, with the expansion draft and then the draft itself, you know, we can add to this squad and we can add depth to the roster and really give ourselves a chance to be, you know, a consistent playoff team and you know, we want to get back to these finals, because they're really enjoyable.
Well, that's what you wanted. You wanted the bar raised, right? I mean, and it is raised now, and you did a wonderful job of going out and, you know, bringing in players that really have been very impactful, from Oyster to Naughton to, you know, obviously Shea Groom. Doesn't hurt she's an Aggie either. These choices you made, I mean, this just to me, when I saw this team come on the field, I'm just like, wow, this is much stronger. This is your team now. Do you feel like this is your team?
Yeah, I do. We took some risks, and we had to make some tough decisions. Some of them potentially not very popular with the fan base and things like that. But we evaluated where we were at the end of last season, and I felt at the end of last season that we weren't too far away, but we constantly, historically, have given away too many goals as a team, and we haven't scored enough. And these were two big areas that we had to improve, and we needed a different type. We had too many players that were the same, so we were really restricted in how we could play. And so making those changes, bringing in different players that really would fit how we really wanted to play, and getting Shea, for example, was a big piece, because I think when we got her, everybody just assumed that we'd be playing her on the wing like she has done for the last couple of years. But I had no intention of playing her on the wing. I wanted a player in the middle because we needed a dribbler. Mm-hmm. We didn't have that last year. And to have a player that can get it and just run it there, but the other team's back line, I felt that would really create more opportunities for us. It'd create more space for Rachel. It'd be able to get the wide players in more often. And that's exactly, what she's done for us. So, she's had a major impact. And then, the centre-backs have come in and done a great job. And, we went through the whole process of really looking at them, who we could get, what level of player could we get. And we felt with Norton Oyster, I felt that these were the two best non-US national team players in the league. And, we had to give up some stuff. And I'm happy in how the trades worked out. I'm pleased. I think the other teams are pleased as well. So that doesn't always happen in sales. But getting in two good and experienced centre-backs, I think, has really given us the foundation to build on. And if we're not conceding goals, then we're going to give ourselves every chance to win a game.
Talking to James Clarkson, NWSL Houston Dash Challenge Cup winners in Utah. And I got to think, there's still a lot of possibility with this team when it comes to doing different things tactically. Obviously, this worked in the tournament. This is a basis for a lot of other things. But I got to think, with the flexibility of the players, the improved depth that you've put together, there's a lot of things you're maybe kind of salivating at thinking that could occur here in the future.
Oh, I just look at like Nichelle Prince and the impact she had through the tournament. She didn't play in the first game, came off the bench in the next few, and then started in the knockout rounds. I think she has the potential to be a top performer, and she only played 9 games for me in the whole time I've been here because of her injury last year in the World Cup. So we've got Stacey Connor, who played 7 plus minutes in the final, slotted in perfectly for us in this field, and she's got a great future ahead of her as well. I think, for me, like Hayley Hansen, she can play a holding midfield player, but she was incredible as a right back. And when you look at the national team pool and things like that, that might be a spot where she could really take advantage of the lack of depth in that position. So, Jane's still really young. I think there's a good young core to the team. And, it's just their attitude, their desire. And like I said, that they want more and more. I'm really excited.
James, listen, thanks so much for coming on. I know it's been a tiring, but a wonderful tiring couple of days after winning the title. It's hard to believe it was only Sunday, so here we are on Tuesday night. You're kind enough to come on the show. We appreciate it. A big congratulations to you. By the way, Rachel Daly said in the interview prior that you pulled off a tactical lesson, I think was the word she said, but that your tactics were spot on, took you to the title, and a big congratulations to you for your work.
That's always good to hear. Well, I appreciate it, Glenn. And that's fun.
All right. Thanks for coming on, James. That's James Clarkson. Houston Dash, NWSL Challenge Cup champions. They did it in style. Did they come together in those knockout stages? You heard it there from the coach, James Clarkson. future very bright now, as culture is going to be changed when you win the NWSL Challenge Cup. Got to take a break. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They are bilingual. Now, the Daspit Law Firm will cover you. They're going to work for you 24-7 nights and weekends. And by the way, John and his firm also, they are the presenting sponsors of our show in Austin tomorrow night. Soccer Matters on the Horn. That's hornfm.com. And tomorrow night we'll have on Kyrie Shelton of Sporting Kansas City, now playing with Alan Pulido. And also the president of Austin FC, Andy Lochnane, on that show for those in Austin and for those here in Houston that want to listen into that show tomorrow night. So a lot of fresh content there. We'll take a break. We've got one more segment to go here. 76-minute Minnesota United with a 1-0 lead over Columbus Crew. Portland Timbers, FC Cincinnati coming up next. Take a break. We'll come back with more. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. By the way, Robert Lewandowski might have been one of the ones who could have potentially won the Ballon d'Or. He's never won it. Had 51 goals in all competitions for Bayern Munich, helping the club win the Bundesliga and German Cup. Best season ever for Lewandowski, that's in question. But he definitely had a shot to win the award, but France football canceling the Ballon d'Or. Houston Dynamo are back in Houston after going out of the MLS's back tournament. It came pretty harshly late in that match, which ended in a 1-1 draw with the LA Galaxy. At 1-0, they were going to advance in penalty kick and stoppage time. So it was a harsh way for them to go out. We didn't get to talk as much about the Dynamo tonight based on the dash. All right, let's get into it. You've heard me talking about Lustav Vermouth a lot lately. I had an opportunity to catch up with Zagat-rated bartender Brett Essler to find out more about Lustav Vermouth and how it can be used and enjoyed.
All right, so we're going to come in with our new segment here, and we're going to be joined by a Lustav brand ambassador. He's a Zagat-rated top bartender in the country. He is Brett Essler. We're calling this segment Making Cocktails at Home with Brett Essler. Well, Brett, the first thing is I want to ask you simply about this, because I absolutely love Lustav Vermouth. I'm using it in a variety of ways, over ice, tonic, club, in gin and tonics. Why is Vermouth now? I'm seeing a lot of articles. Why is it the next biggest thing?
Yeah, you know, with like the cocktail renaissance that's been going on, you're just starting to see ingredients that some people aren't necessarily familiar with starting to make a comeback. You can mix it, you can drink it on its own, neat, you can drink it on the rocks. It's just one of those things that's incredibly versatile and has tons of different uses to it. So I think that's why we're seeing a good comeback on that right now.
Take us a little bit into the botanical side of it, because I think that's appealing to people.
You know, depending on what we're talking about, whether it's the Rojo, whether it's the Blanco, whether it's the Rosé, you know, you're going to see overlapping things. Whether it's the Rosé that's going to have additions of vanilla to it that you might not necessarily see. You know, so it just depends on which one we're talking about. But they're all heavily, you know, heavily macerated with botanicals and stuff like that. So you're going to have some bitterness typically in a lot of them. So it just depends, you know, wormwood, cassia, all of that stuff.
Talking to Brett Essler, he's a Lustav Vermouth brand ambassador. He's one of the top bartenders in the country. And I can attest to that because you've made me cocktails in Austin. All right. So since we've called this segment Making Cocktails at Home with Brett Essler of Lustav Vermouth, give us one of your favorites right now.
Right now, you know, being in the middle of Texas and this crazy heat and humidity, I'm gravitating towards a vermouth spritz. So, you know, 1.5 ounces, 2 ounces of a little bit of the Blanco and top that up with some Topo Chico, get those heavy, aggressive bubbles, and then hit it with a little bit of lemon oil on top for aroma. And I mean, you've got just a ridiculously tasty patio crusher that's low ABV. You can drink a bunch of them, and you're not going to be completely hammered after a few, you know?
All right. He's Brett Essler. He's a Lustau brand ambassador, a Zagat rated bartender, one of the tops in the country. And like I said, I can't say this enough, though. You've made me some great cocktails. I want to ask you to take me into a Lustau vermouth cocktail, as in a gin and tonic, because I like it that way. And I use all three. I use the Rojo, I use the Rosé, and I use the white in gin and tonics.
Definitely. So, you know, the Spanish G&T, very, very popular here in the United States. Something that Kirk and I sometimes talk about is the GVT instead of just the G&T. And that's literally exactly what it sounds like, gin, vermouth, and tonic. You can literally sub in, you can put in the Rosé. I mean, you could get away with the Rojo. And I think personally that the Blanco is going to work the best, kind of help dry everything out. But it's, you know, it's all personal preference on your palate and what you enjoy when you're drinking at home.
What about the cocktail that is so good with Lustau vermouth called the Negroni?
Yes. So your classic Negroni is going to be dark with Campari, kind of like a bright reddish, and the dark sweet vermouth. Lately, I'm actually partial to a white Negroni. So instead of using Campari, we're going to sub out a bitter called Sailor's Aperitif. And instead of the sweet vermouth, we're going to use the Blanco vermouth. And you end up having this Negroni that's kind of like a pale white slash yellowish. In my opinion, it's a little bit lighter, a little bit more refreshing, not quite as bitter.
Speaking of Brett Essler, a Lustau vermouth brand ambassador, and we're coming up with some great cocktails here. You're making me very, very thirsty at this moment, but I've got a radio show to do. How much fun is it to experiment with Lustau vermouth? Because it just seems so adaptable, flexible, and versatile.
Oh, yeah, it's constantly surprising me, honestly. You know, and I think that's one of the most fun things is you don't necessarily think something might go well together. And, you know, like, well, sub in a little Lustau vermouth, see what happens. And next thing you know, you're drooling all over yourself because it's so good. But yeah, it mixes with anything, you know, and like I said, the surprising factor, it surprisingly works so well with so many different things that it's a must have at the home bar for sure.
Lustau vermouth brand ambassador, Brett Essler. White Claw, what does that mean?
White Claw. Oh man. That is all the rage these days. And you know what? You want to spice it up a little bit, throw a little bit of the Lustau vermouth Blanco in there, and you've got yourself a nice little cocktail.
Well, Brett, this has been a great visit. This is our first ever Making Cocktails at Home with Brett Essler, Lustau vermouth brand ambassador. We're going to do this again. I know you've got a lot of recipes in mind. I want to bring them to my audience, yeah. And we'll bring you back on again, and we'll come up with some new cocktails that can be made at home, which that's why Lustau vermouth is perfect right now.
Perfect, my man. I look forward to it. Thank you for having me on and everything.
Thank you for coming on the show. That's
yes, sir.
Lustau vermouth brand ambassador, Brett Essler.
And by the way, when he says oil of lemon, he's basically talking about breaking, you know, you shave off a little lemon peel, you break the lemon peel, and you get that essence in that oil that just really mixes beautiful with the vermouth, whether it's on its own, whether it's with tonic or soda water, or in a gin and tonic like I like. All right, podcastarena.com for our podcasts. And also, don't forget, tomorrow night, SoccerMattersHornFM.com, brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, our presenting sponsors. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, Lustau Vermouth, all our guests, Shay Groom, Rachel Daly, James Clarkson, Jason Longshore, Eddie Robinson. For our producer extraordinaire, Aaron Raybould, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everyone.
ESPN 97.5.